Be with you.
Also with you.
One of the things we wanted to make available to you, we don't use them in the service anymore. I don't know how many years ago this happened. Where is Father Craig here? Maybe 8 years ago or more. There's also things called Eucharistic miracles. That's when some sign or wonder or the gift of miracles manifested. And what we expect in light of what Mark talked about is that if it's true that if you're not discerning correctly, that he said many of you are weak, many of you are sick and dying premature of this. Well, the obvious idea then is if you come expecting this, the opposite takes place. Weaknesses can be healed. That can be emotional, spiritual, mental weaknesses, physical things can happen. There can be all kinds of cool stuff. But sometimes there's also other manifestations of signs and wonders, Eucharistic miracles. So years ago, were we talking, teaching about that on during the week? I don't remember. But this happened over like a month, Craig, is that right? A month period of time? We began to have these crosses appear on our purificators. These are the things that we wipe the cup with. When somebody takes communion, then we wipe the cup. And so I think we have six of them, and we had no explanation for it. And so we keep them stored and just put them on display. So what we'll do is that after, we're going to lay them on the altar, and you're the most sacred space in this building because you're a person. Jesus died for you. And so you want to come up there and check them out. But I wanted to show our folks from Savannah just to check. Like perfect little black crosses. You can hold it and pass it down. There's one more. And we have no idea why it happened or how it happened. It was God confirming some stuff to us. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
They wouldn't
wash
out.
Do what? Yeah, they wouldn't wash out. They just started showing up on a daily basis for a few weeks. And see, it's not a cross like a T. It's a cross shaped the same way the one in the middle. It's like a perfect thing. So for those of you who've never seen this, we'll have them up on the altar so that you can go check it out. But I wanted to show up. So, the most charismatic thing I do is Eucharist. If you can believe that bread and wine becomes the body and the blood of Christ, though it may taste like wine and taste like bread, I'm very grateful. That's grace. I don't want it to taste like blood and taste like body. If you can believe that, then there's no sign and wonder you can't have childlike faith to manifest. I think that's one of the reasons the Lord gave us this gift is to remind us that the Christian life is lived in Narnia. It's called the kingdom of heaven. And things are miraculous. And so we get to feast. I was telling you back there, there's a word called, do this in remembrance of me. It's a word anamnesis. It doesn't mean to remember something. The word literally means to a Hebrew mind, and it was written in Greek, means to bring a past event present. You don't repeat the event. You just bring it present. Jesus was crucified before the foundation of the world. It says in Revelation 13, chapter, verse 8, that you bring a past event present. So you experience it as if you were there when it was happening. And so when you come, you're there. It's that blood. It's that event that's being made present here. Where Jesus' blood was shed, his body was broken. It's that event. So imagine the anointing in that atmosphere if you'd have been standing at the foot of the cross. Okay, so this is Narnia. And so when you come expecting.
So what I wanted to do just for a few minutes this morning, or this afternoon, I guess it is now, is to talk about another woman I love. I love my wife dearly. But there's another woman I love too, St. Catherine of Siena. And I just want to just talk about St. Catherine of Siena just for a few minutes. St. Catherine was, she was part of this study that I did. I had to choose a historical figure, and so I chose St. Catherine. See, Catherine lived from 1347 to 1380. She was 33 years old when she died. And she lived during a time of the Hundred Years' War, during a time of, there's a lot of scandal in the church. There was a lot of political infighting and revolts taking place, especially in Italy, but all over the place. And not only scandals in the church was divided. And it was during the time of famine and the bubonic plague. And when I was studying Catherine, I thought, wow. Little similar to today in some ways. Plagues and political upheaval and wars and factions and sometimes still scandals that ravage the church. And Catherine had an experience when she was 6 years old. She had a vision of the Lord. And she actually, as she was going to church, going to Mass, she had an open vision of the Lord and changed her life. In a sense, you might say that even though we talk about childlike faith, in a sense, you might say that she grew up in that moment. Maybe she grew up to become more of a child. But nonetheless, that's what happened. And the thing that I found so intriguing about Catherine is that, as I said, she only lived to be 33 years old, but she was illiterate most of her life. She didn't learn how to read or write probably till she was at least in her 20s. And there are still questions as to whether or not she actually ever learned how to write. But she lived quite a life, and some real miracles were associated with her praying and even prophesying over all kinds of people. So as a charismatic, I really liked that a lot. Healed people from the bubonic plague that were on death's door, and some prophetic words to especially higher up clergy. And any rate, about 60 or so years after her death, she was canonized. And I know when I say that word, I'm talking about in the context of a particular denomination, Catholic denomination. But if I could just, if there's any kind of reaction amongst any of you, I'm praying that that doesn't happen. If there is, if you could just set that aside for a moment so that that doesn't become a source of rancor for you. And then she was declared a doctor of the church in the 1970s. And she was one of two, I think now three women that have been considered doctors of the church. And I thought, isn't that just like the Lord? Somebody who didn't know how to read or write, somebody who was just sitting in the pews, and she loved him. And the Lord did some amazing things. And the things that was so amazing is the fact that she ended up dictating a book called The Dialogue. And it was a dialogue between herself and the Lord. And she had to dictate a lot of it because, as I said, the question of her being able to write. But all of this happened, all of this dialogue happened after she received communion. She would receive the Eucharist and then she would go into these moments of ecstasy and the Lord would begin to speak to her. And the Lord would begin to reveal himself. And so she would just see and hear. And that was her experience with the Lord. It all had to do with what happened for her during the Eucharist. And she's known for this famous quote, "Catherine's theology of the Eucharist can be distilled down to this fundamental insight that humanity comes to find itself in love. Humanity comes to find itself in love." I know some of you that don't know this, and so this is a repetitive thing. But being in Idaho, I had worked for years and still do it a little bit, work as a guide on these river trips in wilderness areas, six-day trips, running boats and stuff. And so at any rate, on the Middle Fork of the Salmon River, it goes through the second deepest canyon in the United States. Grand Canyon's the third. The deepest canyon is in Hell's Canyon, also in Idaho, on the Snake River. But at any rate, you go down this canyon, or you get into the canyon area, which is around the fourth or fifth day, and you tell people that you're in the second deepest canyon in the United States, and they look up, and everybody oohs and ahs and says, wow, that's amazing, that's up there. And then invariably, you're waiting for someone to say it, because you know somebody's going to say it, and they'll look up and they go, you know, that looks a ways up there, but it doesn't really look all that high. I mean, it looks high, and I say it's kind of rugged and all that, and can you say, well, the reality is you can't see the top from here. See, you're going to have to climb up to where you can see the highest point right there, and you get to that highest point, then you'll be able to see that it goes up a whole lot further. You just can't see it from here. Your perspective is limited. You can only see so far. So when I looked at someone like Catherine and studied that, I thought, Lord, I need to see further. Maybe it's you raising us up on eagle's wings, so that we can see like we've never seen before. Because what happens if our perspective is limited and we don't even know it? And we get comfortable with where we're at because of how we see things is familiar to us. And what if the Lord wants to take away the familiar and maybe see things for the first time? To raise us up in such a way as to say, wow, this gal didn't have all that education. She didn't have all these letters after her name. She seemingly didn't accomplish anything that people would ooh and ah about. Didn't have a lot of influence. Wasn't wealthy. Just loved the Lord. She loved Him. And He took her places, unbelievable places, simply in the Eucharist. I know this is a bit of a segue, but my mom... I love my mom. My mom was my hero in many ways. Love my dad too. Great parents. My mom was a voracious reader, and one time when I was in high school, she said, honey, I've been all over the world. And I'm thinking, no, you haven't. You have not. You haven't been all over the world. I mean, it's kind of, come on, Mom. And she said, no, honey, I've been all over the world in my books. I've seen places. I've been places. And I kind of equate that with the idea of thinking of Catherine in the Eucharist to say, she's been all over the world, all over eternity. And the Lord drew her into that through the mystery of believing that it was His body and blood. And she longed for that. And then she would go into these moments, and sometimes it would last several hours, and I just wanted to quickly read this. Catherine desired to receive the Eucharist every day. After receiving the Eucharist, she would often feel her soul leave her body and be with Jesus, reveling in such love and beauty so extraordinary that she could not find words to describe it. She could feel her soul melt into the love of God. Her participation in the sacramental life of the Church was foundational to her relationship with the Lord. She became very passionate about the Eucharist. Catherine experienced the Lord's extravagant love in the Eucharist as she was touched by boundless charity in the fire of love. Her desire to receive the Eucharist daily, however, was a subject of much controversy. This was because the accepted belief at the time was that frequent reception of the Eucharist would make the recipient less reverent. This was not the case with Catherine. Yet some bishops and priests would often cite this policy and refuse to give her the Eucharist. Another reason for refusing Catherine was what happened when she approached the communion rail. She wept and cried aloud. Then after receiving the Eucharist, she would enter into ecstasies which caused further distractions. Apparently, it was disrupting worship and unsettling to the other worshipers and periodically drew curious onlookers. The ecstasies could last for hours, even past the closing time for the church. More than once, the church staff threw Catherine out into the street rather than keep the church open. Passersby and those who thought that overzealous Christians and exaggeratedly pious women were a public nuisance, they would give her a kick or slap her as they went by. When Catherine awakened again, she had to limp home, covered with bruises and spattered with dirt from the street. They were not willing to wait until these ecstasies ended. This is another segue, okay? That's what I do. I go all over the place. You guys have to connect the dots. Can you imagine if people thought that we were fanatical Christians? They're a bunch of charismatic fanaticans. They really believe this stuff. And they go out and do it. They really believe it, and they go out and they do it. Because apparently they're really in love with the Lord. And it's amazing what the Lord does through those. Another one of Catherine's infamous statements that's probably quoted more than anything is, when you figure out who you are, you will set the world on fire. When you figure out who you are, you'll set the world on fire. I think it was John Wesley that said this. He said, he was called the Sermon on the Mount because he rode his horse around everywhere, gave all these sermons. And he said that, well, he was asked one time, so what do you do when you preach? He said, what I do when I preach is I set myself on fire and people come and watch me burn. Man, what would that be like to be on that, to be on fire, to really be on fire? And to think, man, if the Lord could do this for a gal living in Italy with all the stuff going on, and she seemingly had no power or ability maybe to change a lot of stuff, and yet declared a doctor of the church. Amazing. Amazing what the Lord can do when we say yes. Amazing what the Lord can do even when we receive Him in the Eucharist and say, Lord, not only do I maybe want You to heal me, but just set me on fire for You. And take me to a place that if I can see things and I'm so limited and don't realize, help me to see things from a perspective that maybe I didn't even know was there. Because I've become familiar. And what happens when we get tired of the familiar? When all of a sudden, what happens if in any of our lives, our life as Christians gets boring? Should never happen, right? There's one thing that a Christian ought not to ever become. Boring. Because there's so much more. I just want to share one experience that I had with you regarding the Eucharist. And it's just one. And I wasn't ordained at the time. I was on a retreat. It was actually what was called an 8-day... No, it wasn't. I take that back. It was not an 8-day. It was a weekend retreat. And I'd received the body of Christ, and then I had received the blood of Christ, and I went and I sat down, and I was watching everybody else come up and receive communion. And then all of a sudden, and I don't know how else to share this, but all of a sudden I wasn't there. And all I could tell you is I was being lifted up into the bosom of the Father. And if someone were to say, how do you know you were being lifted up in the bosom of the Father? I'd say, I don't have any idea. All I can tell you is I know that's what was happening. And Jesus walked up to me, He put His arms around me, gave me this hug, and said, see how much I love you, that I give myself to you this much every time you receive me in the Eucharist. Changed my perspective on things. He loves us that much that when we receive Him in the Eucharist, and I realized at that moment that was not just for me, that He takes you and He embraces you and says, see how much I love you, that I give myself to you this much every time you receive me in the Eucharist. What if we could see it? What if we could believe that? What if it would be possible to say, Lord, raise me up to see something maybe I have never, ever seen or experienced before? Amen?